we're back with Probate Court Podcast here with Judge Heather Galvin and Sylvia Thompson. And would y'all please just kind of say a little about your backgrounds and introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name is Heather Galvin. I am the probate judge here in Beaufort County. I was associate probate judge from 2012 until my boss retired in 2022, and I took office in 2023, where I have been serving the public and helping in matters related to estates, guardianships, conservatorships, trusts, mental health commitments, and chemical dependency-based commitments, as well as handling marriage license applications.
Oh, hi, I'm Sylvia Thompson. Nice to meet you. So I've been with probate court about 19 years and mainly in the therapeutic division. I did work estates for a while, but this is therapeutic has grown a lot. And so they've kind of made it its own department. But I'm not originally from Beaufort, but I've been here with my Marine husband, you know, for over 20 years. And enjoy my job and enjoy the area.
Quite fortunate that Sylvia is the division chief of our therapeutic commitment division. So okay. She handles it, is in charge of all the administration for commitment related matters.
Yes. That's fantastic. And that's a great segue into what we're talking. So today we're talking about the therapeutic division of probate court, which I think is something a lot of people, I know myself, didn't really quite realize was a part of probate court. I know a lot of times when we talk about court, we think of punitive and you know, holding people, stuff like that. But, you know, this is a really big part too, is this rehabilitation. So kind of talk about, what does the therapeutic division of the probate court handle?
So what we look at here in this context is individuals who may have a mental illness or may have a chemical dependency issue to the extent that they need help. And so what we do is we try to get those individuals help in the best way possible. We ultimately look at commitment of individuals who are mentally ill and chemically dependent. And what commitment means is they may be on an involuntary basis committed to a hospital or committed to outpatient treatment under a court order. Now, this is the last resort. Typically, when families have issues, they start at Coastal Empire Community Mental Health Center for mental health related issues, or Beaufort County Alcohol and Drug Abuse Department for chemical dependency related issues. They are the screening agency. They handle all that paperwork. And what they do is ensure that the person gets the resources they need. If for some reason the individual is unwilling to seek help and there is an emergency, then the probate court will get involved after Coastal Empire or Beaufort County Alcohol and Drug Abuse Department screens that case.
Okay, so, you know, you said that, you know, you do voluntary and involuntary. So first, kind of, how does the process work if an individual is in need of an emergency commitment?
So the way the process works with emergency commitments is the first thing they do, and we'll just focus on the mental health side, and it's basically the same for the chemical dependency side, but they'll go to Coastal Empire Community Mental Health Center. The individual could go themselves or a family member or a friend or other member of the community, and they could say, this person is having a mental health issue. They really do need help. There is a true emergency. And there's behavior that's taken place within the last 24 hours or so that's necessitated this emergency. And by law, we have to look at a very tight window. It can't be last week they had this issue or the week before, because what we're doing, the paperwork is being completed. If they do meet criteria, it will come over to our court for review. If we feel that the person is an imminent threat to themselves or others, then we can order law enforcement to go out and detain that person and take them to the nearest emergency room, which we don't take that lightly. That's a severe impact on their due process rights. So we only do this in the most extreme of situations. And the families have recourse as well. They don't have to have law enforcement go out and have this person picked up. They can take this individual straight to the emergency room of their nearest hospital. So there are options in place. And the same goes for chemical dependency proceedings. It's just you're starting an alcohol and drug abuse department for those. And Ms. Thompson, if there's anything you want to add or chime in, feel free to do so at any point in time.
Okay, I will, but I think you covered it pretty good.
Thanks.
And one thing I really loved is that you said there is a tight window and that y'all take this very seriously if you're going to involve law enforcement. Because I think a roadblock a lot of people have when seeking help is this fear that they're going to get locked up. They're going to get immediately taken, into custody. And it really is in situations where someone is an immediate threat.
And I'm glad that you said that, because what families need to understand is these law enforcement has no choice. They, by policy, have to go out and handcuff these individuals. And we don't want that to happen. If the family can transport that person safely to an emergency room, perhaps redirect them and say they're going to visit a relative or a friend or do something, it's a last resort to have law enforcement come out. And we just don't want that to happen unless there really is a true emergency.
Now, do y'all ever get like calls from someone? I know, a big thing with therapy is there's the patient client confidentiality, but that can get broken if that someone is an immediate threat to yourself. Do y'all ever deal with someone's therapist say, "Hey, this is what they said in our session. We need to get this person committed."
That's a good question. Sylvia, I'll try to think back. I think it would be rare for us to ever have had that happen. I think usually in the therapeutic setting, you're right, there is that privilege in place. So we don't typically get consults from psychologists or psychiatrists in that context, but I'm sure, if they were an imminent threat to themselves or others, that could happen. Do you recall any, Sylvia?
No, I don't. And I think it's because really, once they would even start to say anything like that, I would direct them to Coastal. Coastal, they're the professionals there. They know how to handle, the situation, with confidentiality. They have a doctor on site, so I would just stop them. So we don't really have to deal with that now. I can't think of an instance now.
Okay, so how does the process work once an individual is in need of that emergency commitment?
Okay, so once they fill out the paperwork at Coastal, then it gets transported over to us. Sylvia is the kind person that handles the paperwork, processes it, and looks at it. And then she checks it over. She gives me her feedback. I look it over as well. So you have two sets of eyes on that paperwork. We look to see if the individual has a prior history with the court. We make sure the paperwork is fully completed. And then from there, Sylvia prepares certain documents, and I'm going to let Ms. Thompson explain what she prepares.
Yeah, so we do a transport order or pickup order for pickup and transport. And so that's completed by me based on what information's given on the affidavit. Once, Judge Galvin signs off on it, I take it down to the sheriff's office. And from there, sheriff's office has, they've got the information to go pick up the individual. We need addresses. We have instances, like Judge Galvin knows, where they'll say, well, he's running around town, and but he's mentally ill, he's causing trouble, but nobody knows where he's at. We have to have an address, which that's one thing the sheriff's office requires. And so I take it down to the sheriff's office. They know where to get him. They pick him up, take him to the nearest hospital. If it's north of the Broad River, it's Buford Memorial. If it's south of the Broad River, it's Hilton Head Hospital.
So, how does the process work for a judicial commitment?
So judicial commitments are a little different. Emergencies, as we said, it's that imminent threat. But if they don't meet criteria for an emergency and the family would still like to proceed, we have an alternative process called a judicial commitment. And the way the judicial commitments work is that they once again start at Coastal Empire or alcohol and drug, depending on if it's a chemical or mental related issue. And they fill out paperwork saying that the person is in need of help. We see these a lot in the chemical context where they're at home and they're drinking quite a bit, but they're not an imminent threat. But they are, eventually over time, it's going to pose an issue and they're unwilling to seek treatment. So in those situations, what families do is they fill out the paperwork. And then from there, it takes about approximately 30 days to get to a hearing, whereas an emergency is imminent. We send out the police, it's right away. What we do is we appoint an attorney for the individual. We have a court hearing. We also, in that context, send them a letter and an order requiring them to be examined at Coastal Empire Community Mental Health Center, determine whether they need involuntary treatment. And so they will do that. We'll have a hearing and then make an adjudication at that hearing as to whether they need involuntary inpatient, involuntary outpatient, a combination of both, or no treatment on an involuntary basis, maybe just voluntary treatment. So we look at that. And that's basically how the judicial process works. It's a little bit of a longer process, but they do get a day in court. And if the individual decompensates or has an issue between the time that we initially set the appointment, or set the hearing and the time they file the paperwork, there's a 30-day lag. If there's something in an intervening emergency, they can always take that person to the emergency room or initiate emergency paperwork. Now, I will say, and we kind of stepped off the emergency process. Once we have law enforcement pick up that individual in an emergency, as you recall, the paperwork's delivered, Ms. Thompson processes it in conjunction with me. She walks it over to the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office sends someone out to pick the individual up and take them to the nearest hospital. At that point, the hospital does an exam and determines if the person is in need of involuntary treatment and, poses a threat to themselves. And in, I would say, 80% of the cases, they determine that there isn't an imminent threat and the case may be dismissed and the person immediately released. If they do admit them to the hospital, then we have to get additional designated examiner's reports. And we actually have a hearing where there is appointed counsel, and that is conducted at the hospital. We do a remote hearing, but the individuals stay in the hospital until we complete that hearing. But it's a relatively short window. What would you say, Sylvia, is the time period from when they're admitted to when there's a hearing? Is it like
The code is very strict. It's 15 days from date of admission. We can't go past 15 days for their hearing, for their process.
Yep. So in that way, they get due process relatively quickly. In the judicial, it takes a while to get to the hearing, but they're not being detained. The only instance in which we would detain them is if they do not show up for that exam. So, as you recall, they fill out the paperwork. We schedule a hearing and say, you need to be examined before the hearing. Here's your exam date. If they don't show up for that examination, we issue a pickup order to law enforcement and ask that they be picked up and transported to that examination so that two designated examiners can examine them and complete forms regarding their condition.
So are these matters public record?
Good question. Sylvia, I'll turn that over to you.
No, everything is confidential. It's almost like HIPAA at the hospital, HIPAA laws, we can't confirm or deny if there's a patient. Somebody calls and says, oh, can you tell me if there's a record on or a file on so and so? No, we can't, so it's very highly confidential. Yeah.
But how does a commitment proceeding impact someone's ability to own or purchase a firearm or ammunition?
So this is interesting. A considerable, I would say, gosh, how long has it been? 10, 15 years ago, there was an incident involving an individual who was a Beaufort County resident, and that individual allegedly went to Culloden County, purchased a handgun, took that handgun, and went to Charleston to a private school. Ashley Hall, I believe, was the school in Charleston. The individual tried to harm individuals, and thank goodness the gun jammed, and they did not harm anyone. As a result of that incident, there was legislation that was passed on the state level that required any individual who has been found in need of involuntary inpatient or involuntary outpatient treatment to be reported to a database. And that database requires that they not ship, transport, possess, or receive a firearm or ammunition. In fact, it's a felony for them to do so. And what we do, it's a part of the order that we put in place. They can appeal that down the road if they regain their capacity or they feel they're no longer mentally ill to the extent that such an order would be needed. And there is a process for that, but their gun rights are removed. And it is a felony for them to possess that firearm. But that is the impact of that. And it can be a deterrent sometimes for families if somebody's in law enforcement or someone is in the military or is a security guard or has a job where a gun is involved. But we say, you know, it's always better to get treatment for mental illness and to help others get treatment for mental illness. And it doesn't mean that those rights can't be restored. I think the most important thing we need to look at is helping that person as an individual and getting them back to a good place. And if there is that fear or that component to it, they can also work with, you know, local mental health like NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, you know, and other organizations to try to help individuals through such processes. But really getting them help is more important than them losing their gun rights temporarily.
And I know this kind of talk, we talked a lot about, blocking being able to buy guns, but if someone already has possession of the guns, is there a confiscation process or what's kind of, how does that work?
We advise the families that they aren't allowed to ship, transport, possess, or receive a firearm or ammunition. And it is up to the families to ensure that that takes place or the individual, and they can be charged with a felony. There isn't a set process to have those guns turned over, but we tell that individual that, you know, that could be very problematic for them if they're found on their person.
That makes sense. So, what happens if a person is non-compliant with their court order of treatment?
Sylvia, I'll turn that over to you.
So if somebody calls and tells me that somebody's been ordered for treatment, they're not going to their treatment. The first thing I'm going to tell them is go to the agency where it started, mental health or alcohol and drug, and report that to the counselor that they're working with. There might be a reason. Sometimes if they don't know any different of this person, they might be in jail or they might have moved. That's why they're not going. But that's for the counselor at the agency to find out. And if they are missing, they're non-compliant, they're missing appointments, they'll send a letter to the court. And upon that, it's reviewed by the judge. And nor sometimes then a supplemental hearing is needed, and that's just a show cause hearing to find out why aren't you going. There might be a good reason, so but we have to get that hearing. They have to be processed, so it's another hearing, and it's just whatever the outcome is from that is, they might get further inpatient. It just depends, but yeah. But basically their first step is to go to the agency, report it to them. So then the agency can send a letter to the court.
Excellent point. And in addition, the agency will report to us any non-compliance as well. So if an individual is non-compliant with court-ordered outpatient treatment, we get a notification. They usually have a two-step process where they'll try to contact the individual and work with them to get them treatment. But if they're non-compliant, then we can issue, a summons to show cause and say that we're going to have the supplemental proceeding. The individual will be appointed counsel, but we could put them in jail for contempt. We could also order further involuntary inpatient treatment or additional outpatient treatment or a combination of both. So we take that very seriously when individuals are non-compliant with their treatment plan.
Are there any wait lists for treatment?
In terms of wait lists for treatment, there are a limited number of beds throughout the state for inpatient treatment. So, what takes priority a lot of times are the emergencies. So, if there's an emergency-based treatment, that's going to take priority. For those judicial proceedings we talked about, where you have a hearing in 30 days, there it can be a long wait list, and it is hard on families, and it's hard on us to see individuals wait for bed space. It can take months before a bed becomes available at a state facility. And once a bed becomes available, then law enforcement will transport the individual from Beaufort County to that state facility in Columbia for treatment. So that is typically how that process will work. We'll issue a pickup order at the time a bed becomes available. However, we often order outpatient treatment to run concurrent with the inpatient treatment. So what that means is we give a person and we may order involuntary inpatient treatment, but while we're waiting on that bed, We say, hey, you have an opportunity here. Go to outpatient treatment. And at the time a bed becomes available, if you're compliant and we get good reports, you don't have to go. We'll give that bed to somebody else. So know that that option's out there.
Yeah, and I was just going to add, if you can imagine, for mental health, there's Bryan Hospital. For chemical, it's Morris Village. We're using those two because they're state hospitals. Every county in the state are using those two hospitals. So there can be a wait. Yes, sometimes it can be lengthy. It's too bad.
Yeah,
That
it's a
makes
challenge to us. And we're hoping through a mental health initiative through the state that we'll be looking at, hopefully they've talked about circuit treatment centers and whatnot, is something they would like to look at as a goal. Has it happened? No, but at least the conversations are getting there. And that makes me feel better. But yeah, it does hurt us to see our residents wait for beds. And I will say, Ms. Thompson is very diligent, as is her team, to continue to contact facilities, to check where we're at on the list, to keep, checking over and over, because we're very diligent about making sure we do everything possible on our end to get the person the help they need.
And I really think I like the way y'all, kind of y'all really do seem to be focused on we're getting someone help. I know a lot of times for people, this seems more like it's punitive and it's like something that they are required to do, but it really is trying to get everyone and their families to be able to live their healthiest and best lives.
I agree. We always tell individuals we're here because we care. And it's hard for me that it's a court hearing and they see a judge and they're nervous. And I want them to know, usually when people see judges, they think I've done something wrong or there's something that adverse is going to happen. And we want them to know that it's a safe environment, that everybody there, from the counselors to the family to us, we're there because we care. And we want you to be your best self, whatever that is.
I love that. I think that was great.
We do handle commitment of individuals who are found not fit to stand trial and not likely to become fit to stand trial in criminal matters. It's a small component of what we do, but on occasion, somebody commits a crime. It could be a minor crime, it could be a major crime. A crime's a crime. But if they do commit a crime and their attorney or public defender finds that they are not fit and not likely to become fit due to mental illness, the charges can be dropped and they can come through our court. And we then can assess whether they need treatment and how that treatment will work. It's an interesting process. It starts up in the circuit court, the circuit court judge is involved, and then remands the case down to us basically for that judicial component. And there are evaluations that take place, but that is an interesting facet of what we do. So we do handle some of those issues. And I would like to point out for families, there are resources available. We really encourage families to get involved in support groups for themselves, either through Coastal Empire Community Mental Health Center, through Beaufort County Alcohol and Drug Abuse Department, or for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And they are programs for both individuals who are suffering from mental illness or chemical dependency, but families as well. Because a lot of times families feel helpless and they feel like they're the only ones out there that are going through this. And I want to tell them they are not alone, that there is support out there for them and there are people that care. And that if they talk to others, their best resource, as opposed to calling the court, is to really talk to families that have been through the experience and to get ideas from them on how to move forward and how to look at the system, the way it's set up, and work together for a great resolution. And that's all we care about at the end, is making sure that everyone is in a good place.
I love that. And I think that's a great thing for people to remember is they're not alone in this. Mental illness and addiction are things that really affect all kinds of people, no matter your socioeconomic status. I mean, it can really affect anyone.
And I
Yeah,
also want to
absolutely.
promote as well. There is, and let me just, I'm gonna, we can loop back on this one quick second. So there is a new nationwide calling system. If you can call or text 988, or chat with 988lifeline.org, And what that'll do is that's through the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and you'll reach trained crisis counselors who can help in a mental health, substance use, or suicide crisis. So 988 is a big new thing that's been rolled out to South Carolina and the rest of the country, where we're looking at getting people specialized, dedicated help on an emergency basis. So think 988.
988 is it's like 911, but with two eights instead. So definitely a very easy thing to remember and a very important thing to have.
So, like I said, we kind of go north and south of the broad is the line. If you have drug and alcohol abuse questions or issues, and it this one is in Bluffton, that number is going to be 843-255-6020. If you're north of the broad and it's drug and alcohol issues again, it's 843-255-6000. If now we're on mental health, south of the Broad, it's going to be Coastal Empire Community Mental Health Center at 843-681-4865. Or coastal on the north side of the Broad River, it's 843-524-3378.
You can catch us again every month on Probate Corner, your home for Beaufort County Probate Court information.